And he's funny. Time for the show.
Sometimes faith can feel as cold as winter, and it can look as dark as winter, too. I grew up in the cold in Wisconsin, so I understand being physically cold. But I also understand being spiritually cold, feeling distant from God because of depression, because of sickness, because of friends dying. I feel distance from God often, and I used to fight those feelings, but now I embrace them, and I sit with them. Winter Faith has become my new home. So I created the Winter Faith podcast, because sometimes faith feels like winter.
Pages in, maybe even before that, I was with you, and like I could feel it as I'm reading the words and, you know, showing, like having physical emotions and crying and just feeling the weight of everything. And it's probably, I think you do a really good job in the book, but it's like, of course, it's this traumatic event that I'll let you tell, but then the aftermath of it is also very traumatic. And I think you did a really good job of sharing, oh, what that would be like and how difficult that was. So we'll get into it. Grateful to have you with us, Taylor, for my podcast today. And you have a book coming out in a few weeks, which is, I'm sure, very exciting after 2 years of a lot of work and, well, more than 2 years of work. Honestly, you know that. But yeah, just maybe introduce your book a little bit and who you are for those that don't know. And hopefully everybody knows you before you even come on this show. But in case they don't.
That would be nice. Yeah, in case you don't know me, my name is Taylor Schumann. And I have a book coming out in July, on July 20th. And it's called When Thoughts and Prayers Aren't Enough, A Shooting Survivor's Journey into the Reality of Gun Violence. And it kind of documents my experience of being wounded in a school shooting in 2013 and what that was like to walk through that day and the following weeks and months and years. And then we kind of dive into a bit about gun violence in general, the types of gun violence that America sees, what we can do about it, why we don't do anything about it, and try to kind of find some common ground with one another on the places we disagree. So I hope it's helpful for people, and I hope it's kind of an insight into something that not everyone goes through or can really empathize with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What do you feel like is the, I guess, like the theme of your book?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think that one of the things that I really focused on when I was writing it was that I wanted to write something that I was searching for in the days after. Like, I wanted to write the book that I needed to read. I would buy, like, so many books. I bought books about, you know, suffering and, you know, the theology of suffering and healing and all these kind of things. And like, I read other memoirs from survivors of shootings, and nothing was like quite what I was feeling or going through. Everything was like a bit too happy and positive, and which is good. There's a place for that. But there's also this kind of time where we tend to gloss over the really hard parts in the name of gratefulness or healing or faith, whatever you want to call it. And I needed something that was more focused on kind of the grief and lament of what had happened to me, and that it wasn't okay what happened to me, and we shouldn't be okay with it happening to other people. So I think that I wanted to invite all sorts of people who have been through things that aren't shootings, because most people haven't, and they can't connect with that, but they can connect with something really hard, something that happened to them, something they didn't anticipate or ask for or want to happen to them. And I think we can all kind of relate to what that's like, to kind of face tragedy or really hard things in our lives. And so kind of seeing that, experiencing that, and hopefully learning some things about ourselves and finding hope and meaning in those things. I hope that's kind of what, even more than like the gun violence and gun reform stuff, I really hope people are able to feel seen in whatever they're walking through and not alone. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there's someone else out there that is saying, oh, me too. I've been there. I'm with you. Like, you're not by yourself. I see you and what you're feeling right now.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. There's a lot of kind of like theology of suffering stuff out there that I don't particularly find helpful for my mm-hmm. grief. Mm-hmm. My podcast is called Winter Faith. Mm-hmm. I feel like I stay in winter all mm-hmm. the time. I think a lot of people go through, not just Christians, although most of my audience and guests are Christians, but you know, there's just winter faith in general. Like, we question why things are, and we can feel dark, we can feel cold, you know, God can feel distant if you're a Christian, mm-hmm. but just people can feel distant. And to me, you are describing in the book, you're describing the loneliness of going through trauma and suffering. And like, theologically, I think you're spot on that like a lot of our churches don't know what to do. One of the significant things to me is when you're talking about the Pulse shooting in Orlando, and you're waiting in church for somebody to say something about that, and the whole service goes by, if I remember it right, the mm-hmm. whole service goes by and nobody says anything.
Yep.
And that feeling of aloneness, of, well, we'll just be silent about it because I don't know, why are we silent about it? I guess I'll ask you.
You know, I don't know. That one's still, like, there's still, like, such this, like, pain when I think about that. Because that shooting yeah. happened on a, like, late Saturday night. It was mm-hmm. all over the news Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And, like, over 50 people. I think it was 52 people were killed. Mm. Like, how do we go to church with knowing, like, this headline is in the news, 52 people, like, fellow human beings, fellow people that God created and loves were, like, gunned down and murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't say anything at church. And I thought, oh, at least we'll, like, pray. And, you know, the church I had been at this church for a bit, like, they knew our family, what I'd been through, and I just thought, oh, someone will say something. And no one said anything. And, you know, to me, that was, like, this moment of clarity that, like, this is just something we don't touch in a lot of Christian circles, because I have to believe that if it was something like a tornado or a natural disaster, that those things are more likely to be named. But any issue that we've created to be remotely seen as political or controversial, these are just things we shy away from in church. And you know, I think maybe the part of the country the church was in, you know, Southwest Virginia, gun country, has something to do with
yeah.
it. And
sure.
It's just people have a really hard time broaching that topic, even when it just should be, hey, a lot of people died and this is awful. This is a tragedy. Let's pray for these families.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the number of, you know, you have a lot of statistics in the book that I think are really helpful, but you also tell a lot of stories, and you realize, and I think you have a lot of humility to say this, it's like, it's not just 40,000 people, it's 40,000 people and their families and their friends and their communities,
mm-hmm.
which yeah. is a lot more than 40,000.
Yeah, we tend to put numbers on these things, even with a lot of the most high profile, if you will, shootings, we mm-hmm. tend to remember them by numbers. You know, sure. I think most people can tell you how many kids and teachers were killed at Sandy Hook, or, you know, I went to Virginia Tech, so the number 32 is, I will never forget it. You know, these kinds of numbers, we always forget about how many people were injured. And it kind of stopped there, right? Like, we see these numbers and we're like, wow, that's terrible. That must have been awful. And it falls out of the news, and we don't have, because we don't have to see it generally, we don't have an idea of what a shooting, and even everyday gun violence, you know, drive-by shootings, targeted shootings, domestic violence, like, we don't have any context for what these shootings do to families, to communities. And if, when you think about a shooting like Pulse, it's 52 people plus the shooter's family. Like, they have family members, they have friends. That's a community that has lost people. Those are places of work that have lost people. We just have no real way to, like, process that kind of suffering. And so we assign numbers to it, and that can make it kind of cold to think about.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think we see numbers, and we don't really see the faces. Maybe we don't watch the news. Mm-hmm. The news, you know, for understandable reasons, doesn't show, you know, the footage, mm-hmm. and might not have the footage. So if you wouldn't mind, could you walk us through part of what your experience was that day?
Yeah, of course. So I was working at a community college. I worked in the front desk area, so I was just kind of the first person, you know, you see when you walk through the door. And I was sitting at my desk, kind of turning away from the door, talking to my boss and our IT specialist, who was there that day helping me out with my computer. And my boss just kind of stopped talking, and I turned around and in my chair and saw a young man standing there with a gun pointed at my head. And it definitely took a second to kind of process and realize what was happening. My first thought, because students would come in all the time and, like, ask us to, like, hold things while they would go to class, you know, book bag, gym bag, whatever. And my first thought was like, oh, we can't hold this gun for him. Like, you can't bring guns to school. Cause my mind was just trying so hard to, like, rationalize this absurd thing that could not possibly be happening. And, eventually, you know, I kind of ducked under my desk, and my boss and our other employee, Brian, they ran down the hall, and I could see the shooter follow them. So I knew that was kind of my only shot to get anywhere safe. And so I took off and ran into a supply closet that was kind of behind my desk. And he saw me run in there. So we turned around and fired one shot through the door. And it kind of went through the door right as I was using that side of my body to shut the door. And so the bullet went through the door and then through my hand. And the door was pretty thick. It was one of those fireproof doors. And so kind of shards of wood and shrapnel kind of exploded from the door. So I actually couldn't see out of one of my eyes for a bit, and pieces in my chest and my face. And I saw blood and, you know, realized, oh, this has to be mine. Like, I've been shot. This is happening to me. And I couldn't hear anyone else in the building, but I could just hear gunshots going off. And that was maybe one of the scariest things. Like, I was stuck in this room. I had no way of knowing, like, what was happening to other people. And, you know, ultimately what would happen to me. I couldn't lock the door. It didn't lock from the inside, and my key was back at my desk. Mm-hmm. So I decided to kind of scoot up against the door with my body and just keep it shut. If he tried to come back, you know, I was just going to try to keep the door shut. And in those moments, I was losing a lot of blood. I was pretty convinced that, no one was going to get to me in time. Like, you know, you don't know, did someone call the police? I don't have my phone. I can't call the police. You're just, like, praying and hoping someone is coming. And, you know, there were a lot of moments then when I just was convinced I was going to die. And I was just, in my lowest point was really, like, God, this is so terrible. I am so scared. If I'm going to die, please just take me now. Because it is too hard to sit here and think about this. And I don't know what to do. Like, I have no idea what to pray. You know, please just, if this is it, take me, please. And You know, I just so clearly like knew God was speaking to me and telling me that was not going to be my day. You know, there was more for me to do. And so about that moment, I got up from the door and I was going to go hide behind a copy machine. And just about then he shot through the door again and the bullet came through right where my other arm had been in front of the door. So thankfully I wasn't wounded that time. And then he didn't shoot through the door anymore. You know, I was really afraid he was going to try to come in. And, about that time I heard some voices outside in the lobby talking and I heard someone yelling, "It's okay. It's okay. You can come out. Is anyone hurt?" And, you know, I kind of heard things before from other shootings that, you know, people will try to pretend to be wounded or pretend to be someone who's hurt to try to get you to come out. And so I was really nervous to even leave the room. And there was a big hole in the door from where the bullet had come through. So I kind of peeked through the hole and I could see that it was someone else. It was safe. There were a couple of students around. And so I kind of opened the door and stuck my hand out so that they could see that I was hurt and needed help. And this man came over to me, kind of guided me out of the room, took me outside, and from there the EMTs came, and you know, that was kind of the initial event. Later I found out that this man who stopped the shooting was an off-duty security guard that worked at the mall where the school was located. And he was off that day. He was out with his wife. It was their anniversary. And he heard it come over the police scanner. And he just drove their car to the school. And he got out and came inside. He didn't have a gun or anything. He wasn't armed. And he got the shooter to drop his gun and surrender before the police got there. You know, I don't know how many lives he saved that day. But, you know, I consider him my hero. And so I went to the hospital and kind of my family and my fiance had found out about it and ended up, you know, coming. And I had one surgery that day, was in the hospital for about 5 days. Ultimately, I would end up having 4 surgeries and about a year of occupational therapy, rehab, a lot of counseling. I still see a counselor. So yeah, that's kind of the main story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate you going through that. I'm sure, does it feel like real? Like,
just, you know, it's so interesting. It kind of depends on how I'm doing, like how I'm feeling. You know, some days if I'm really feeling the effects of it still, or if I'm in a lot of physical pain, like it definitely feels more real and more tender. You know, but on days where I'm having a good day and I'm doing pretty well, it does sometimes feel like this happened to someone else and not me. And I think that's just like, you know, our body, our mind's way of helping us heal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I think just putting, I mean, obviously just hearing you say it as opposed to reading it affects me. I can feel, the fear. You know, the absolute fear. And when we, I don't know, like when we're humans that acknowledge other humans and not, as you say, like a number, it feels like a moment, I guess, like an aha moment, but kind of like more like, duh, like, why don't we care about this?
Yeah.
It's especially if we're going to say, you know, I'm speaking to the church, like if we are going to say like, well, I don't know, Second Amendment freedom, or I don't even know what the other reasons are, but
about it.
maybe you can help me, but
yeah. Yes. It's interesting, right? Like this is one of the reasons that I am so open and willing to talk about it and share it, because stories matter.
Yeah.
Right? They have weight. And if we haven't personally experienced something, it is so easy to just put it out of our mind. Like, oh, that was on the news. I don't have to think about it anymore. I can wall off from this. Like, that doesn't affect me.
Right.
And we can do this with so many things. Like, we can do this with refugees and immigrants. Mm-hmm. We can do it with people who are in prison. We can mm-hmm. do it with even stuff like people who've experienced abuse, domestic violence, mm-hmm. sexual abuse. Like,
mm-hmm.
we can read the stories, oh, that's so sad, that's terrible. But it's not our life. We don't have to keep thinking about it. But when you're able to talk to someone or listen to someone's voice, share their experience, see their face, hear these details, it's so much easier to have empathy and say, wow, this is a person. Like, this is someone just like me. And this is what they go through. And that's what sticks with us. You know, those are the things that help shape our opinions and our beliefs. It's so easy to have opinions and beliefs about things that you've never experienced.
Right.
And it's much harder to ignore those things when you talk to someone that has lived it and you can see the effects of it.
I'm really curious. So you're 22 years old when the shooting takes place, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are there things that, you know, 0 to 22 you cared about and now you don't spend any time on them?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm saying like something that's not a, like something that, like at age 20 or something you cared about that now you're like, I don't know. Like, I guess I'm trying to get at like, how did it change your life in a way of like, I'm not going to spend time doing that anymore.
Oh, I don't know
if I'm asking a good question. Or
like,
not.
Did it give me any like realizations, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I'm so ridiculous. I just think about how, so like I was a hospital chaplain for a couple of years. I'm still like, I mean, I still could do that work. I just don't currently, it's not what I'm currently doing, but, there were just visits that really affected me, but I can still like ignore those things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're telling the story about like a hospital chaplain coming and talking to you, there was a couple of questions I thought were really interesting that he asked you that you talk about in the book.
Yeah. Sorry, you cut out there for a second.
I know. I just realized the internet, just, I got a message about that.
Okay.
I'm going to do some editing because I don't like what I did. That's the beauty of editing.
Yes.
I'm going to find the page. Unless you remember, I was just like, there's like a specific question he said.
Yeah, she asked me.
Or
think,
she said. Sorry.
Yeah, I think this is the one that I write about. But the hospital chaplain asked me, you know, if Jesus was here, if he was sitting at the foot of your bed right now, what would you ask him?
Yeah.
Or what would you tell him? Yeah. And the question alone, I thought, was just such a poignant, like, tender question for mm-hmm. me. It really like brought this vision of, cause I had felt the whole time like, oh, God is with me. God is near to me. You know, that was never in question for me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was really scared and thought I was going to die, like I did not feel like God was far away. Mm-hmm. But when she asked me that, just like the thought of picturing Jesus sitting here with me, like, that was so powerful to me. And, like, he's accessible. I can ask him stuff, even if he's not physically sitting on my bed. Like, I can talk to him. And my answer to her was, like, what does he want me to do now? Like, I survived this thing. This is terrible. So, like, what do I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with this? Because I think even that moment, I was thinking, there's so many people that don't survive this. Like, why me? Why did I survive this? What should I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that part of, is guilt that you talk about? Is that connected to that? Like, you're just trying to figure out what, why me?
Yeah. And in the beginning, I didn't quite know what that was. I just really felt this like, oh, well, I survived this awful thing. There must be something I'm supposed to do. And I began to internalize that as, well, so many people die. I didn't die. So I need to prove to people that, like, I am someone worth that was worth saving. Or, like, I need to prove to people that I understand how important it is that I survived. And I need to, like, make it worth it and do something big and important. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like such a normal where that hits you today when you think about that.
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, like, I didn't know what that would look like. Like, I couldn't work. I was just spending most of my time at home, like, just doing kind of piddly things. And I would just think, like, wow, am I wasting everybody's time? Like, all I'm doing is sitting at home. And, like, shouldn't I be doing something more important now? And, but what it really taught me was to just, like, that I didn't have to prove to anyone, like, least of all, God. Like, I didn't have to prove to God that, like, it was worth saving my life.
Right.
But for so long, I did believe that. And, you know, now I'm kind of doing some of those things that I thought I should be doing. You know, I did write a book, and I'm getting to talk to a lot of people and do some of those things, but I have such a clearer mind about why this is good and why I wanted to do this and why I think it's important, and it has nothing to do with feeling like I had to do this or like I had a responsibility or like that I'm having to prove anything to anyone. It's just because God has given me this story. He's been with me in it, and he's given me something to talk about, and I can do that without feeling like I'm like striving in it or like trying to gain approval. And I can't imagine kind of doing this back then when really I was just so worried that, oh, someone's going to find me out and think, oh, well, she's doing nothing with this. You know, she had this amazing story and she's not doing anything with it.
It is this weird world. And I don't know exactly like theologically or like church wise where you grew up. But it is this weird thing where people are like, oh, I want to have like a good testimony.
Yes. I
tell me about that.
I grew up, you know, Southern Baptist, and, was super involved like in all the kids stuff and youth ministry. And you know, they would take us, we'd go to like summer camp and there'd be this speaker who's like, I was on drugs and selling drugs and, you know, I was like violent or, you know, and then I found Jesus and Jesus came into my life and now I am good and I'm here speaking to all these kids. And, you know, I cannot tell you how many people I heard speak like this, or it was like, you know, women who'd had abortions and like, now I'm a believer, you know, all these things. And I'm just sitting there like, I live in a Christian home and I have two parents who love each other and I have a sister and I go to church every Sunday and like, man, my testimony is boring. Like, I have nothing to offer. Like, oh yeah, I got saved at 7 and I never did drugs and I love Jesus. Like, that's not gonna sway anyone's hearts and minds. Like, I did. It felt so boring. Like, oh, something exciting needs to happen to me, like, to be able to do anything. Like, oh, that's so weird, because I'm sure any of those people would be like, wow, I wish that, you know, I wish I hadn't had to go through all these hard things. It's just such a weird thing, like, growing up.
Yeah, it is. Voices. Yeah, mine's very, you know, kind of a similar experience where it's like, I don't think I have a dramatic testimony. And even if we're going with that theory of like, this is the best testimony, but you don't even have it because you were a Christian when you were shot. So it's like, you missed out. Like, it could have been so much better.
Oh,
what were
man.
You doing?
Man.
It's just, it's so weird. Like, why can't we just accept that everybody goes through brokenness? Everybody goes through a lot of things to get where you are, to follow and believe whatever you follow and believe. Why can't that be enough? I don't it's, and I'm kind of talking to myself, but I do think people need to hear that.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's kind of this, like, I don't know the exact phrase I want to use here, but it's kind of like the glorification of like dramatic stories. And like, most people don't have dramatic stories. Like, most people are just like living a quiet life and have hard things that happen to them. Maybe they lose a loved one or a grandparent or a pet, or they get sick, or their parents got divorced, or they were bullied. Like, these are things that happen to a lot of people. And I think those people need to know that like, their stories are important, and like, God sees all those things. And like, you don't have to have this like crazy life and testimony to experience God's power and love in your life. You know, like, I don't know. It's this interesting thing. And I think that's why whenever I talk about this stuff, I really try to like remind people that like, all the things that like God has done in my life and the ways I felt him working, like, that's available to anyone, like, not just people who have been through like really traumatic things. God is with us in the everyday moments of our life. And yeah, it's just so important.
I like, when I was reading that part, I really, I want to find, I had a bunch of stuff highlighted. Like, I just connected with a lot of it. I really, really enjoyed reading it. Like, I mean,
thank
that.
You.
Like, even, it was, so even though it was hard, even though it was hard, and it's like, I wish she didn't have to go through that. Like, you know, when I'm hearing about the surgeries, the moment where you're, where you see your family for the first time, it's just like, oh, I mean, I'm feeling it now.
Yeah.
It's just had to be this thing. But you have this line, the truth of the thing is that pain is a part of what keeps us all going when it feels impossible and the efforts seem futile. Pain is what hangs around in the back of our mind, reminding me, I shouldn't have to go through this. I don't want anyone else to have to go through this. You go on to say, like, I believe God makes beauty from ashes, so I've come to believe that maybe the ashes are critical in making the beauty. It's hard to change your mind about something, isn't it? To realize you might be wrong about something you've believed for so many years. We find so much of our identity in belief systems and our opinions that when one of the threads gets pulled, it begins to feel like the whole thing might be unravel with it. And just like the inner dialogue that you're going through, like in your mind of like, I'm going through this pain, I'm thinking about God, I'm thinking about like my identity, I'm thinking about how I want to like change my of people, but that's in seems impossible and really hard. And it's not just about gun violence, it's about humanity. And like, just hearing your like inner dialogue, I was like, yeah, I thought it was phenomenal. Like, I just really connected with this idea of like, man, I'm just trying to like figure something out that makes sense.
Yeah.
And like, that is such a crucial, I mean, at least for me, that's like, I spent a lot of time thinking about that. And like, this is one example of like, I mean, would I be talking about gun violence? I don't know. Like, you know, is it something that I like think about that much? Like, honestly, I think about it in the world that I live in of having young kids in elementary school, but if I was just a single guy, maybe not. And how much of that like inner dialogue, like the, just like the, I like what you said about like the weight, like there's the stories matter, the weight of stories matter, your story matters. And just like, I found like a lot of like interconnectedness to like all of humanity as I'm reading that. Cause everybody understands what you're describing, whatever pain it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that including that stuff was really important to me because I think if people don't know me or like aren't familiar with me, it might seem like, because I write a lot about, you know, the beliefs I held before the shooting. So I think to a lot of people it might, it's easy to assume, oh, the shooting is what changed everything. So I became, you know, pro-gun reform, and then everything else kind of flowed from that. So I think even like people that are close to me, it's easy to assume, oh, well, she was shot, so now she started to believe in gun reform, and then all her other opinions changed. And really, it's like the total opposite. Like, I experienced this horrible thing. I was able to see and experience God in a new way. He opened my eyes to all sorts of, like, truths that I'd never had to confront before. I was able to see God's heart for people who are unseen, people who experience injustice, kind of really the heart of God, the real foundations of a Christian faith, you know, to love God, to love others, to put others before ourselves, to care for the least of these, you know, like even stuff like Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians, like, true freedom is considering others. You know, true freedom is loving our neighbor and considering how this affects other people. And so it was from that that I began to see, oh, wow, these opinions I've had on guns and that I see a lot of other Christians have about guns, this doesn't sit well with me. Like, how can I believe these things about God and then these things about guns? Or my rights, or whatever it is. So it's really kind of out of a transformation of my faith that I just saw all these pieces that couldn't fit anymore, and was able to process what happened to me and what was happening to other people who were experiencing gun violence and see that in a new way that really transformed what I thought and what I believed. And I think that is true for so many of us. You know, we start kind of, you know, deconstruction is kind of a hot phrase right now that a lot of people are talking about, and no one seems to have like a, there's no like real general definition. Like, people are just talking about it and making what they want of it. And but it does feel like that thread, right? It's like, oh, we start questioning one thing and then it's like the whole sweater is a pile of thread. Like, what do we do with this? So I think it's easy to like have assumptions about, you know, what that looks like for everyone. But for me, it definitely was like, all these things just can't fit like this anymore. Like, this just doesn't make sense here.
I mean, so what can we do? Like, obviously, go buy Taylor's book, listen to all her podcasts. Listen to the podcast. Do you have your podcast? Maybe you should start a podcast. That's what I'm going to tell you to do.
I do not have a podcast.
I think it's time.
You know, Heather, I did that interview with Heather, and she said the same thing. She was like, you need to do a podcast. I was like, wow, that really stresses me out. I don't know about that. Like, I hate listening
to my voice. It's easier than writing. Well, you don't have to listen to it. That's the great thing. I never listen to my podcast. So it's easy. I mean, you should keep writing, obviously, too. But I'm like the opposite. Like, I do podcasting because it's easier than writing. I don't have to deal with a publisher. I don't have to deal with dates. Nothing. Now,
true.
Probably a lot more, you know, successful. But yeah, I do think, yeah, what I think people are like, for me, I'm going to read it. And I'm going to be like, I'm going to tell people about it. And then I'm going to be like, okay, what can I do?
Yeah, I think that there are a few things people can do. One thing that I would recommend is like supporting organizations that are doing gun violence research, that are doing, if your community has like a local violence prevention program, maybe it's like a community-based program to give money to. Those are organizations that are doing a lot of really good work. And actually, one of the great things that, you know, a bit ago, there were some executive orders that Biden signed concerning gun violence. And one of those was a lot of funding for these local violence prevention programs. And I'm so excited about that, because that's one thing that, like, people don't really think about. It's not very, like, glamorous. You know, it's not like a new federal law. It doesn't feel like big change, but there are a lot of these places that really know what their own city needs. And so kind of researching, seeing if there's anything like that where you live. There are, like, survivors programs you can give to. Survivors Lead is a really good one. And then bigger places like Everytown, Gifford's Law Center for Gun Violence. And then another thing you can do is look at the kind of people you're voting for. And I'm not just talking like national elections. I'm talking about like your state representatives, your state senators. State, we haven't had a federal gun law passed in about 25 years. We have a lot of gun laws being passed at the state, and those are either stronger gun laws or things that weaken gun laws. So find out what's going on in your state. If you're someone, maybe you're more conservative, you really don't think you can vote for a Democrat, make your opinion about gun violence known to those people that are representing you. Because what we know about gun reform is that a majority of Americans support things like expanded background checks, red flag laws. You know, I talk about all these things in the book. So if the majority of people support these things and our representatives don't support them because of whatever reason, then they're not really representing us very well. So making your opinions known, even when it feels like that's not really a big thing that you can do, it is important. Having conversations with people in your circle, these are valuable things. And even just having a different way of thinking about gun violence is really important, because to me, we can pass all the laws we want to, but if we don't have a cultural shift in the way we think about guns, our rights to own guns, gun violence, if we don't have that cultural shift, then the laws don't really matter, because people's hearts haven't changed, right? Like, I can't imagine the good that could be done in the world if we had this widespread change in our culture where we're thinking, yeah, I have this right to own a gun, but is that wise for my community? Maybe I don't need to own 10 guns. Like, maybe I don't need to do all these things, because that can seep out into so many other issues, right? Like that justice mindset. So what I really want to say to people is, like, don't discount those, like, inner changes. Don't discount those little conversations you have. They might not feel big to you, but all of that is so important.
What would you say to kind of church leaders, pastors, ministers?
Yeah.
What do they need to be doing?
Talk about gun violence in your church. It can be as simple as finding out kind of what's going on in your community, the type of gun violence that affects you, especially you live in a city that has a lot of gun violence. I do. Charleston is a beautiful place, but we have a lot of gun violence here. So even just kind of staying on the pulse of what's going on, and in your announcements and your prayer, hey guys, we had some violence here this week. Let's keep in mind people who have been affected by gun violence. Something as simple as that. It's not even a full-fledged conversation. It's just reminding people that this is an important issue that we as Christians and a church can consider, kind of planting those little seeds. There are other things we can do. There's some really awesome, like, faith-based documentaries about gun violence. I've been at a church before that has had, like, a showing. And then kind of one really good one is called The Armor of Light. I really recommend that one. And, you know, you can offer a showing of it and then have a conversation afterwards, something like that. You know, just these things to kind of get people in your congregation talking and thinking about the place for Christians in this conversation. That's not something we have to be, like, so paranoid and afraid of talking about. And I realize that a lot of pastors and churches right now are kind of maxed out on controversial topics and, like, feeling the pressure to, like, carry these conversations. So I want to be, like, really tender and, like, give so much grace in these areas, because it's not just the pastor's job, right? Like,
sure,
this is a church conversation we can have, and it doesn't have to be, you know, I don't want to like shame anyone or say like, you haven't done this. But there is a place for it in church.
Well, to me, that's part of the frustration. The frustrating part for me is like, I'm kind of like with you, you have a line in the book where it's like, I didn't read like a bunch of fancy theology and come to my conclusion that violence was bad. Like, yeah. That's the same. I remember being like in elementary, maybe not elementary, definitely like middle school, and just being like, I think I'm against like war and guns. And then people would be like, no, it's, you know, there's whatever. I don't even know what people would say. But yeah. I'm like, I don't know. I read Jesus, love your enemies. It's like, love those who hate you. Be kind to those that hate you. Like, I just, yeah. I don't, it's bizarre to me that is a controversial issue. And you are very graceful as you're, and I think you're, yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, that there are, you know, people feel like, oh, there's so many topics, mm-hmm. you know, LGBTQ topics and mm-hmm. Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. and now gun violence and immigration. Oh my goodness. But I'm like, I feel like that's like life. Like,
it is, yeah.
That's what Jesus did every day.
Yeah. And like
I just, yeah, it's sad to me that it has become, and you talk about this in the book, like, it's sad that the church is silent about this in a yeah. lot of ways.
Yeah. I think we have, I mean, so much of these kind of topics, they do, we've created a system where they have to be political. Like, that's yeah. how we,
that's
how we handle
Christ,
these things. Yeah,
like
exactly.
Christian.
Yeah. Like, and one thing that I think, like, writing this book during COVID was such a
oh yeah, we didn't even
experience
talk about that.
Because I, this theme of like, what does it look like to have to do something that we don't like to keep someone else safe? Like, what does it look like to say, yeah, this inconveniences me a little and I don't love wearing a mask, but you know what? It's going to save people and keep other people healthy and protect them. So I think I can do that. And the opposite of that was also true. So that was like constantly on my mind, and it really pieced together a lot of this for me, that we have in America as Christians, we have two very strong identities as Christians and as Americans. And we've really blurred the lines on which we think of first and which we think of second. And I think we have to explore that. Like, what, when we think about gun violence, what does Jesus call us to think about? You know, what did Jesus, what was the example he set for this? When we think about refugees, you know, what was the example of Jesus set? Like, we should be thinking about that first, not like, what do as Americans, like, what should we do as Americans? Of course, that has to play into it because that's the society we live in. But I think we have to have this shift where we think about the issue as Christians first, and when we're given permission to do that. Like, we've lived so long in this mindset of like, well, we can't talk about this in church because it's political. Well, maybe we don't have to talk about the politics of it at church. Maybe we could just talk about the faith of it at church, you know, what our faith calls us to do. And I wish we could do that in a way that doesn't feel so explosive.
Yeah, I mean, I think just having lament services,
yeah,
prayers, lament prayers. I mean, that's what the early church had, tons of lament and prayers. Most of the Psalms are lament.
Yes.
And there's a huge place for that because that actually brings about healing and builds empathy. And although it's hard to do and not fun, like, it's just something that's so important. And that has to start probably with our family, with, you know, with my kid. When they're sad, I need to honor that and not be like, get over it, as much as I just want to say, let's move on to the next thing. It's not a big deal that your toy broke. Like, it's like, you can build something there with our small, like, in our marriages. Like, yeah. I think there's a lot to be gained from lament.
Yeah, that's so good because, yeah, that's another area we don't do great in, like you're saying. And so I think just to lead an example of that and say, this is appropriate for us to do in church. And we can lament this and we can sit with us and acknowledge it without feeling the need to solve it right in this instance, because that's so much where the conversation goes, right? Like, okay, well, yeah, this is bad, but like, what can we do? Well, maybe people just had permission to acknowledge it as a problem and a terrible tragedy and like bad. That's
evil.
Really,
like just,
yes,
this is evil. Yeah.
Yes, evil. And as an attack on like fellow image bearers, fellow people, like if we could just sit with that a little bit, I mean, that would be so important. That would be such a shift in the way, because I think so many people don't even take the time to sit with it as a problem. You know, it's just something we can pass by. We don't have to think about it. So I think even just that permission of a church saying, we're going to grieve this and we don't have to agree on all the ways we think we can fix it, but we all need to agree that it's worth grieving and it's worth acknowledging. I love that. I think that's really important. In Charleston, you know, because Charleston experienced the church shooting in 2015. And so, Charleston has these services usually around every year on the anniversary. It's just, you know, it's a service just to remember these people and acknowledge the shooting that happened here and the gun violence that still happens in the city. I love that thought about just acknowledging the lament, giving people permission.
Yeah. You know, right now with just kind of the work that obviously you're involved in with, you know, promoting the people that are going to support gun control or, I guess a positive way would be like peaceful, nonviolent living. Are you, like, when you think about the future, are you hopeful, the same, less hopeful?
I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
I have to be. I have to live in this world, hopefully for a long time. I have a 2.5-year-old son who has to live in this world for a long time. I have to be hopeful that we can do better here. I think that there are lots of things that are happening in so many states around the country who are working really hard to pass laws, gun safety laws in their states that can protect more people based on kind of evidence we have of what works and what doesn't. I see a generation coming up, you know, kind of behind ours who really, really cares about so many things, but gun violence specifically. They're tired of it. They're tired of growing up in this place where it's like a daily reality, a daily fear. I see so much hope coming from that. And I see a lot of people whose eyes have been opened to just general things that they haven't experienced and that they can't see. And so I really hope that the culmination of all these things will be a country that's safer, that considers its people as more valuable than a few words written on a piece of paper a long time by flawed human beings, as we all are. I'm hopeful. I mean, yeah.
Well,
not every day. Not every day.
Of course,
some days,
of course.
You know, it's like, oh, what are we doing? But, you know, generally, I hope is my posture I try to keep.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I thank you, Taylor, for your book, for your words, for taking some time with me this morning. And there's about 100 lines that I underlined that I didn't get to, but maybe we can have another conversation another time. But, just really grateful for your story, and I'm going to encourage people to buy it. I think it's going to be a great thing that I'm going to have conversations, you know, with people about, and to be able to know you and talk to you in person, obviously, is just such a, you know, just such an honor, and I'm grateful that you're alive.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this show today, everybody. I just want to give a few shout outs. Today's music, the one and only Josh Cleveland. Today's artwork and all the Winter Faith artwork and digital design, Dominique Montaigne. The intro was done by Scarlet Fox. And I am just grateful to be creating and editing this podcast. My name is Andy Frazier. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Winter Faith Podcast. Subscribe on all those platforms, and also we are on Patreon if you would like to support the show, and also leave a review on iTunes at The Winter Faith Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week. Thank you.